And if you'd like to follow up on any of the stories we've discussed this week, the transcripts and references are online at nakedscientist.com/news. Now, in past times, if your heart stopped beating, that probably meant that you wouldn't live to tell the tale. But modern medical techniques mean that many heart attack patients survive, and those who've been that near to death often say that they experience bright lights or other strange phenomena. Until now, doctors have struggled to understand why, but Gino Bordagin looked into the question in a paper in PNAS this week.
In the literature, what I find is 10 to 20% of cardiac arrest survivors have their near-death experiences. There are various kinds. They're not all identical, but there are some common threads, such as seeing bright light. But I even think that that number is underestimation, because a lot of people are afraid to speak up about their experiences. They're afraid to be ridiculed. They're not convinced this is really supernatural, but yet really science hasn't provided any answers. And I think I might be biased, but I think our study might be really the first attempt, and then I'm sure many more will follow.
How do you go about investigating near-death experiences? Because obviously when a human is having a near-death experience, we've normally got other things to worry about than measuring their brainwaves.
That's right. Oh, yeah. I mean, if I know somebody's about to have near-death experiences, the first instinct is to save them rather than to stick electrodes in their brain. So I think to do that kind of studies for individuals with cardiac arrest is really tough, unless you know somebody's going to have a pre-scheduled brain operation, and we could perhaps give them EEG electro recording just in case that patients, when they wake up, they report some kind of near-death experiences. I think those might be the kind of more feasible studies one could perform in the future if there are a sufficient number of patients who actually have are available for neurosurgeons to gather data from.
So until we can get those human subjects, what subjects did you use in this study and how did you go about looking at this phenomenon?
Well, rodents are standard animal models for our studies, whether it's rats and mice, and that is just a reality of today's scientific research. So what we did is to give them anesthetics and make sure they're not sensing any pain, and then we gave them lethal injection to the heart to stop the heart. During this whole time, we monitor their brain activity by placing 6 electrodes in distant parts of the brain, and the results were all published in the paper.
And far from the brain going quiet after death, it actually became quite active.
Exactly. So that's what actually we're really surprised to find. Measurable activity is all we were predicting, maybe something comparable to the levels you would see when animals awake, but what we were really surprised by is how high those activities were. In fact, they're 5 to 8 times higher during the near-death state than the waking state. So I think then I really remembered the inhuman near-death experience is one of the very common descriptions of experience is the realer than real, hyper-vivid, hyper-lucid. I mean, to the patients who experience them, I mean, they seem to be extremely real. So I think the realness of that perhaps is reflected by these measures that we provided. And that is still not fully confirmed. And we need many scientists to get involved in these kind of studies so we have a more advanced understanding of this phenomenon.
Was any particular areas of the brain involved in this activity? Like if someone saw a bright light, was the vision parts of our brain involved in this activity?
Well, initially, since we hear a lot about bright light, my first instinct is, the visual cortex must be highly activated. In fact, maybe visual cortex is the only part that's activated. That's what I thought naively initially. But I was surprised by how the entire brain seems to be participating in this amazing event, the electrical oscillation, not just occipital areas, which is the visual cortex. I mean, there is a unique sequence of events that every single animal demonstrates. There's different frequency at the different time period during this 30-second cardiac arrest. So initially, it's at a very narrow band of high-frequency activities, and then eventually it culminated really in the highly activated, not only in terms of the power density, but it's also in the coherence, which is a synchronized firing of distant parts of the brain, mainly in the gamma range. So the gamma is actually extend huge range in this case, anywhere from 20 to 25 hertz all the way up to 250 hertz that were investigated in our studies.
Does this activity tell us anything about why these near-death experiences might happen? Some of us might presume that if the brain's going without oxygen, it would just shut down very quietly. Do we know why? Is the brain having like a last hurrah, a last gasp before it runs out of oxygen?
Yeah, I saw that comment. But I think perhaps since we see it in rats, and I predict we're going to see that in humans in the future, my guess, this is really brain's built-in defense against lack of oxygen, lack of glucose. We all know that the brain is very plastic. So if you do something to damage the brain, to injure the brain, the brain actually mounts a defense against that injury and insult. So I think this is perhaps is one built-in mechanism against external threat. And this lack of oxygen, glucose may be just one of the ultimate threat to brain survival.
That was Dreamo Borchagen from the University of Michigan.
So that's all we've got time for here in Cambridge, but now back to Chris Smith and Victoria Gill, who are in sunnier climes on the west coast of Australia.
Hello, we're joining you from Murdoch University in Perth, where we've come to participate in Australia's National Science Week. So we thought we'd also take the opportunity to talk to some of the scientists who work here too. Perth's in the southwest of the country. It's one of Australia's, and in fact the world's, most isolated cities. It's thousands of kilometres from here to any other major centre, but it is beautiful and supposedly also the sunniest city in the world. Perth sits on the Swan and the Canning Rivers, and it's home to about 2 million people. The major local industries are mining, winemaking and agriculture.
This region's also a research powerhouse. Part of the world's most powerful telescope, the Square Kilometre Array, is being developed and coordinated from here. And Perth also has its own Nobel Prize winner in Barry Marshall, who co-discovered the bacterium Helicobacter pylori as the cause of stomach ulcers, famously giving himself a dose of the stuff.
But